Okay. Baruch Shechianu v'kimanu v'gianu l'zman hazeh. It's really wonderful to start a new zman with you, learning Machshava. I apologize, I'm standing off to the side, but I need to do a Zoom. It's really a pleasure to see all of you. I know many of you. I don't know a lot of you. I really hope we can get to know each other. And that's one of the reasons why I really wanted to meet in person, at least on the first day, even if we're generally going to meet on Zoom for various reasons. So at least you could see me in person, and hopefully we'll get to know each other over the course of this month. Feel free to ask questions during Shir. Sometimes during Shir, I'm not going to take your questions because I need to finish a point or something like that. And we could ask after Shir during the week. I'm usually on the second floor of Gluck. So please, I hope I get a chance to get to know you. Obviously, it's a very, very big Shir, so that makes it hard. But at least if you're interested, I'm interested. Generally speaking, we are going to meet on Zoom. I know that sometimes that might be frustrating. It's easier to space out on Zoom, certainly when there's a strong Yetzer Hara to look at other things, because I speak a little too slowly. And so, may as well try to do two things at once. So one thing I would very strongly recommend is taking good notes. Notes will allow you to chazer. There is a bechina, and as a, but more importantly, to chazer for life and to know and come back to the ideas that we learn. Specifically, just to incentivize it a little more, so the bechina is open notes, but only your notes. Can't use somebody else's notes. So that's another reason to take good notes. I'm going to give you Makoros. Usually, I'll try to get the Makoros out before this year. So if you'd like to look at them in advance, but it's very worthwhile to look them up afterwards. It's especially if something is particularly interesting to you, because we're learning sugyos. So we're going to oftentimes see, like we will today, snippets from different svarim, different places. And if you really want to get a feeling of what these svarim really say, or get a feeling for their flavor, for their tom, so you have to look these things up inside. And that's certainly something that's very, very worthwhile. I want to start with a ha'ara somebody made at the end of last year. Perhaps it was a little bit of a critique. So oftentimes, though not always, we'll spend several weeks really trying to focus on the same sugya. And this particular person asked, why do we have to spend so much time on each sugya? They thought it would be better if, every week we did a different topic, and obviously it would be it couldn't be that comprehensive. If you try to do Hashgacha Pratis in 1 week, you're going to not understand it as much as if you spend 3 or 4 or 5 weeks, or for that matter, a whole year. But that's what their question was, and I certainly understand it. There is a lot of beauty to brevity. It's sometimes easy to get lost when things become very complex, lost because you forgot what you started with, or lost because you're just, end up being so focused on the nitty gritty that you forget what's the bigger picture. And I totally hear that. I want to be mayor one point, which relates to all learning. The Rambam is saying this about Machshava in particular. He's really talking about metaphysics. But I think it relates to Machshava more generally. That's the first Makor you have over here from the Mor Nevuchim. So the Rambam writes, the preparatory studies, again, he's talking about metaphysics, are of long duration. And man, in his natural desire to reach the goal, finds them too wearisome and does not wish to be troubled by them. Meaning to say that sometimes you so much want to get to the conclusion, you have no patience for the process. Suppose you awaken a person, even the most simple person, and say to him, do you not desire to know what the heavens are, what is their number and their form, what beings are contained in them, what the angels are, how the creation of the whole world took place, what is its purpose, and what is the relation to its various parts, to each other, what is the nature of the neshama, how it enters the body, whether it has an independent existence, if so, how could it exist independently of the body, by what means, and to what purpose, and similar problems. He would undoubtedly say, yes, right? Wake up a person in the middle of the night. All sorts of people have lots of questions. Machshava questions, different people are bothered by different things, problem of evil, whatever it is. And you ask the person, you know, is this something you want to learn about? Is this something you want to understand? Wake him up in the middle of the night. He said, of course, I totally want to understand. But he will wish to satisfy that desire and to attain that and to attain to that knowledge by listening to a few words from you. Ask him to interrupt his usual pursuits for a week till he learns all this. He would not do it and would be satisfied and contented with imaginary and misleading notions. He would refuse to believe that there's anything which requires preparatory studies and dogged research. In other words, he's very, very interested in theory, but if you tell him it takes a lot of time and hard work, and he'd be happier with his false notions than investing the time into arriving at the truth. So this is something I think we all probably experience. It's sort of interesting because, you know, we sort of think of the need for short sound bites as like a modern problem. You know, everybody's cell phones and short attention spans, and now nobody could sit and learn. But in the days of the Rambam, you know, everybody had this, you know, eternal attention spans. But you see, the Rambam had the same problems as we had. People are interested in knowing the information. They have the questions, but they're not interested in the answers. Sometimes, you know, I get a lot of different questions and people have questions and, you know, you start giving a long answer and they're like, that's it, you know, spacing out halfway through. And so, but the Rambam is saying that if you really want to understand these things, so it takes time. He says there are few people, he calls them Hasridim Asher Hashem Korei, the remnant that Hashem calls, a handful of people who succeed in achieving this Shleimus because they were willing to invest the time to work on these things. And he quotes a pasuk that reflects this idea. The pasuk says, Shema Eitz of the Kabel Musar, Leman Tachkam Ba'acharisecha. It's Leman Tachkam, but it's only Ba'acharisecha, the end. If you go through all of the hard work, then in the end, you'll become a chacham. But you can't expect that it's going to be quick or easy. And if somebody goes ahead and gives you like a simple answer, then probably it's at the very least incomplete. And the Rambam also says likely wrong. I want to talk about another point where why conclusions are sometimes so hard to reach. And why it's also important to have a lot of breadth and connection to a Rebbe in terms of these types of sugyos. A lot of times you'll hear people make sweeping statements about important topics. You know, it'll start with the Torah says X or Chazal maintain Y. And then you examine some of the makoros and you'll see things that are fakert. So is that a pircha? Or to put it a little differently, sometimes you'll hear people build a whole philosophy, a whole idea, a whole construct, a whole derech hachayim based off of a chazal, a pasuk, and it taka sounds like, you know, that medrash that they're quoting supports their contention. Does that mean that their contention is correct? So if you look at the next makor, it's a me'iri from Shabbos Nun Hei Med Aleph. The afal pi shenishar dasa omer kein b'tiyofta. The topic he's talking about is not particularly relevant for us. Maybe we'll get back to it a little later. But there's a machlokas in the Gemara in Shabbos whether there's misa below chait. One opinion says ein misa below chait. And the Gemara asks kashas on that and concludes with a tiyofta. So seemingly, the conclusion of the Gemara is very straightforward. Obviously, yesh misa below chait. After all, the opinion it said ein misa below chait, there's a tiyofta, right? Certainly, I think when you're learning halacha, if there's a tiyufta, that's the end of the story. But the Rambam, the Meiri writes, even though that's taka what the Gemara concludes, ein ikare ha'emunos tzluyos berayos shalpshute mekraos vagados. When it comes to an ikar emuna, whether there's misa below chet or not, is a fundamental question. And when it comes to questions like that, it's not totally in rayos of the pshute mikros or agados. Meaning to say, the Meiri himself, and it's not just Meiri, the Rambam in a handful of places concludes, of course, ein misa below chet. To say that yesh misa below chet would be unjust. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is just. How could he kill someone who hasn't sinned? So the MS is ein misa below chet. Aye, but the Gemara slugs up that opinion. It leaves off with a tiyufta. The Meir doesn't even answer the question. He just says, you should understand, you should appreciate that you can't build a philosophy out of one makor. And when it comes to ikari amunos, they're not tluyos berayos, shalpshute mikros. It's not that he's saying that pasuk is wrong, but it's the pasuk is not or may not be saying what it seems like it's saying, the agados, and certainly agados. This might be what a number of Gaonim mean when they say ein meshivin ba'agados. And I'll show you, just to sort of highlight this point, but the four places where the Rambam basically seems to say something that's at odds with Chazal. And he justifies it with what seems to be a very questionable tactic. And we'll try to understand what he's really doing. So the first, what I have here is example number one. Will the world be destroyed? Or will world be destroyed for a 1,000-year period? So the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, Amar of Ketina, Shis Alfei Shani Havi Alma V'chad Charov. Shenemar v'nizgav Hashem levado b'yom hu. Hashem will be alone, implying that there's nothing else. So the world will be destroyed. So the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim quotes this Gemara, and he says, I'll read it to you. It is the saying of an individual that corresponds to a certain manner of thinking. Well, we would say in halachas, it's a das yachid, right? It's a das yachid. We don't paskin that way. Now, the term psak is probably incorrect or imprecise. Maybe another time we'll talk about whether there is such a thing as psak in Divrei Agada. But that's what he says. It's a das yachid. It's not correct. So the Rashba, which you have over here, objects. And he says, I don't understand. V'ein anu roin b'talmud cholik alav. Right? It's not like there's a machlokas. To say somebody's a das yachid, you have to show there's a das rabbin, right? The Rambam doesn't say it's a das rabbin. He says, oh, there's no cholik. Some try to be miyasha the Rambam by being medayik in one place or another. Maybe there is a cholik, but that's example one. The Rambam has a chazal. It goes against the Mahalik, he's saying. He says it's a das yachid. Example number two. Same idea. It's the famous Mishnah and Brachos and the Gemara and Brachos, Omer al kanti po yagi rachamecha mishaskin oso. And the Gemara explains in one answer, Mipnei she'osa midosav shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu rachamim Be'enan Alexeros. So the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim understands that what this means is that the mitzvos of the Torah are xeros. They don't have a reason. And that's why Mishas can also, therefore the person who gives the reason for Shiluach HaKein is acting inappropriately, and Mishas can also. Now the Rambam himself says the reason for Shiluach HaKein is in fact because of compassion for the animal. Compassion for the animal. It's a very painful experience for the mother to see her chicks or her eggs taken out from under her. And therefore the Torah says, send away the mother. And because of the Torah's compassion for animals, it instructed us to do the mitzvah Shiluach HaKein. So the Rambam acknowledges that he's against the Gemara. He's against the Gemara. Now, again, you don't have to read the Gemara that way. The Ramban, for example, reads the Gemara differently, but the simple reading of the Gemara, the way the Rambam understood the Gemara, he was against the Gemara. And what does he do? He says basically the same thing. He writes, it is the expression of one of the two opinions mentioned by us, namely that the precepts of the Torah have no other reason but the divine will. We follow the other opinion. In other words, taketz machlokas. This Mishnah is going like the Manda Amar that mitzvos don't have reasons. And we say fakert, we say mitzvos do have reasons. So the Maral says about this that how could you say this? This is again, there is no other opinion in the, well, in this case, there actually is another opinion how to read the Gemara, but there's no other opinion than the Mishnah. In other words, and even more actually interesting over here, though I think we're not going to get into that today, is that in the Mishnah Torah, he does pass in this. But the Rambam says, again, it's basically, it's a machlokas, we don't hold like that. And the Maral says, how, this is in the Tiferes Yisrael, Parag Vav, the Maral says, how could you do that? Like, there's no machlokas, it's not like there's a machlokas in the Gemara that you're free to pass in. You conjured up a dissenting opinion, and then you said, we pass in like that dissenting opinion. Where is that dissenting opinion? Example number three, Yisurin Shel Ava. Rambam writes, I'm going to read it in English. Once we're doing the Mor Nevuchim, we may as well, unless anyone reads Arabic over here. So this is a top of page two. As for us, we believe that all of human circumstances are according to that which is deserved. And he is exalted and above injustice. And that only those among us deserving punishment are punished. This is what is stated in the Torah of Moshe, namely that everything depends upon that which is deserved. And the multitude of our scholars also speak in accordance to this opinion. So here we already have to be medayik a little bit. When he said the multitude of scholars, so that would suggest that there's machlokas. For you will find them saying expressly, ein misa b'lo chet, b'lo yisurin b'lo avon. Again, which opinion is this? The opinion that the Gemara said tiyufta, like we saw the Meiri point out. It is the discourse of the sages, though, there occurs something additional over and above what is found in the text of the Torah, namely the dictum of some of them. Again, so he's saying some of them, v'hum amar ktsasam. In other words, again, he's saying it's a machlokas regarding suffering of love, yisurin shel ava. For according to this opinion, sometimes misfortune befalls an individual, not because of his having sinned before, but in order to that his reward should be greater. The way the Rambam understands Yisurin Shel Ava is that Hashem, out of love, makes a person suffer, so he'll get more reward, more Olam Haba. That might not be the pshat in Yisurin Shel Ava. The Ramban has a different Havana, but that's the way the Rambam understood it. And again, so what does the Rambam say? He rejects it. He says, there's no such thing as Yisurin Shel Ava. It's It's a ma'amar ktsasam, right? Some of them hold it, but it's not the correct opinion. Once again, the Rambam seems to create a machlokas. There's a whole Gemara in Brachos about Yisur and Shalava. It doesn't sound like it's a machlokas. And he's accepting the other opinion. And finally, the fourth example is about astrology. This is a letter to the Jews of Marseille. And the Rambam writes that the notion of astrology is bunk. There's no such thing, you know, stars don't affect our future, etc., etc. So the Rambam notes that there are places where certainly Chazal do seem to accept the notion of astrology. Even, in fact, the Gemara that says Ein Mazel B'Yisrael at the end of Shabbos clearly seems to hold that there is such a thing as Mazel. The Gemara over there says Ein Mazel B'Yisrael, and I'll prove it to you, because once there are several stories about along this line, including the story of the daughter of Rabbi Akiva. But you have people that had this bad Mazel, and then through extraordinary Maisim Tovim, they were saved, despite their Mazel. But the assumption of the Gemara is there is such a thing as Mazel. Rambam says, yeah, taka, but it's divrei yachid min hachachamim, kind of das yachid of some sort. Oh. So how are we supposed to understand these Rambams? Some people will tell you that the Rambam, you know, really didn't think you had to listen to Chazal. And so he's like arguing with Chazal in a sort of a nice way. I don't think that's correct. I think, as we'll see shortly, the Rambam's approach to understanding Chazal's was with tremendous deference. Whether or not he held you can never argue or not is an interesting question, but I don't think that's the correct mahalich over here. I think the correct mahalich over here is really what we saw in the Meiri that we started from. What the Rambam is basically telling you in all four of these cases, and again, the Rambam's position is not the only position here. In all four of these cases, there are those that certainly argue with the Rambam. But the Yesod HaDvarim is something that I think everybody would agree to on some level. The Rambam is saying that if we look at the Torah, broadly speaking, which includes lots and lots of psukim, lots and lots of Ma'amari Chazal, Svara, then these particular opinions or viewpoints are at odds with that. The concept, for example, that there would be Misa below Chait is unjust. Think about all the psukim that talk about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's being just. Tzadik v'yashar hu. And the Rambam goes ahead elsewhere and shows that's the case. So if you look at the Torah, broadly speaking, you'll see that the concept of the Torah is one which certainly speaks of Hashem's justice, in which case to say something like there's Misa below Chait or even Yisur and Shalava doesn't make sense. If you go ahead and you look at so many places in Chazal, in the Torah, where it's clear, it's not stated, but it's clear, the clear underlying assumption that mitzvos have reasons. So if you see a Gemara that indicates that mitzvos don't have reasons, that is not going to be the accepted viewpoint. We'll see it as a das yachid. Maybe that's what the Gemara says. But we're going to see that it's a das yachid by looking at Torah more broadly. We don't have time, but I think if you look at the Rambam in each and every one of these cases, you'll see the Rambam does in fact show from lots and lots of psukim and lots of Ma'amari Chazal, that the position that he is arguing for does reflect the mainstream Torah view. And therefore, when you go ahead and you see a outlier, so we're not like the Meiri said right at the beginning, that Ein ikare ha'emunos tluyos birayos shel pshute mikros v'agados. If you want to go ahead and give a drasha, you know, give a sermon, so you can. You can. You could pick a Ma'amar Chazal and give a sermon on it. But that's not how you build ikare emuna. Now, but what do you do with it? How do you explain that position? So the Rambam does different things. Sometimes he'll say, like we saw, it's a das yachid, it's machlokas. Sometimes he'll say, it can't be understood kipshuto, like that Meiri was being merames to. It has an esoteric or secret understanding. There are different approaches. Sometimes he says it might be a harasha or a position that's relevant to a particular circumstance, but shouldn't be understood as generally relevant. He does different things. But when trying to understand the perspective of the Torah, especially when it comes to Ikar Yamuna, so the Rambam, like we see the Meiri over here, says you have to look at the Torah much more broadly. And it's interesting, I mentioned the word as sermons. So there's a famous line in the Ramban's disputation in Barcelona. As you know, the Ramban had a disputation with the Meshumad Paul Fryer, and he was trying to bring Rios that Yeshu was the Messiah. And one of the Rios he brings is from the Nevuah of Hine Yaskil Abdi and the like. Anyway, he asks certain kashas of Chazal. And the Ramban writes, he says, there are different types of sources. And one of them are, and he calls them sermons. He uses like a Latin word. Sermons. And he says, those aren't koveya. So there's a general question. You know, some people say, ah, oh, you see, thought you could disagree with Chazal. And other people said, no, he was just saying it to be docha, the guy, that's not what he really thought. But it could also be saying something along the lines of what we're suggesting, which is that you can't build a philosophy over a, you know, it's fine to build a sermon off of a statement in Chazal. But if you're trying to figure out what Ikar Emunah are, so that's not the way to do it. I want to consider another place where perhaps you see this idea reflected a little differently. This is from an article that Rav Tursky wrote. It's entitled A Glimpse of the Rav. It was published in Tradition. You can download the whole article for free at the Tradition website. As you would expect, it's a masterpiece. And he is explaining that, he's talking about the Rav in particular, but the Balei HaMesorah in general, the importance of having and looking at Torah from a broad perspective, which is exactly what we're suggesting is what the Rambam is doing. So he writes, again, at middle of page 2 in the Makoros, one cannot fully understand any chapter of Torah or topic of Talmud if it is disjointed from the rest of Torah. In the words of the Tosefta, all of Torah is one subject matter. No sugya can be fully illumined in isolation. The statutes of God are true. Together they are just. Yachdav. When studied comprehensively and viewed collectively, the justice and truth of God's statutes emerge. When grasped as a unified, integrated whole, the profundity of Torah shines forth. And it's in this context that Rav Tursky also points out the important role of intuition. The Torah intuition of the Chachmei HaMesorah is a central and critical component of the Mesorah itself. Petrusky gives a number of examples of intuition, which again, I think are very much in keeping with the idea that we've been saying. Two examples, one we'll read inside, one I'll mention, which are particularly striking. And they're striking because these are statements made by Gedolei Yisrael, statements that have become universally accepted, that certainly go against the simple understanding or superficial understanding of Chazal. And their positions are advocated with virtually no textual proof. Meaning to say, they don't bring raios. In a typical tshuva, you know, and 99% of tshuvos, this is true, if a posek is advocating for a particular position, he's going to bring raios. He's going to bring textual support. But these are two examples where you see that their conclusions were arrived at not from a particular Gemara diyuk, an inference from a Rashba, but from Torah Bechlal. And it's this intuition, in a sense, is even more powerful. So the first example, this is the ruling of the Chazon Ish, that the din of Moridin v'lo Malin no longer applies any longer. V'nira de'ein din Moridin ela bizman shashkachaso galuya, kemo bizman shayunisim mitzuyin, umeshamesh es baskol, the tzadikei ador tachas hashkacha pratis haniris la'ein kol. When is it that, again, top of page three, when is it that we have this concept of moridin? That's in a world where God's intervention is obvious. Tzadikim experienced tremendous hashkacha. Bakofrim az benelizos miuchedes. Batayas hayetzer latayvas miuchedes defkevos. And therefore, there's a certain perversity when these kofrim are turning people to pursue their taivos, to pursue anarchy. The az haya biur rishayim gidro shalola. Shakol yadu. Ki hadachas hador mevi puranios li'olam, who mevi davar v'chare v'rav ba'olam. Because it's obvious to everyone that if we follow these rishayim, so it's going to destroy the world. And so the need to excise these rishayim is obvious. Aval bizman ha'alam shenichris ha'emuna min dalas ha'am. Nowadays, it's the opposite. Most people are non-believers. Most people don't see the clear and unambiguous evidence for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's existence in Hashkacha. So ein b'maisa ha-horada geder hafratza elo safas hafratza. What happens if you start killing these heretics? Is that going to bring people closer to Torah? No. Fakert. Shia beinam kemais ashchasa v'alimos chas b'shalom. People won't see it that way. It's fanaticism. The kevan shekol atzmenu lesakein. Since the whole purpose here is lesakein. In other words, this is not a formal punishment. This isn't an onesh of beis din. It's a tikkun. It's in the sense of makin v'onjin shalom adin. To save the rest of society from the dangers that these people present. Well, it's not going to help. It's not going to make things better. Ein hadin oy b'shash ein bo tikkun v'alenu lachziram b'avosos ha'ava. We should bring them back with chains of love instead of pushing them into pits. Ulamidam b'keren ora. So again, he's going ahead and he's writing out halachos from Shas, crossing them out, saying these don't apply anymore. But it's coming from his mastery of Torah. That's what's at the heart of that revolutionary ruling. The other example, which I didn't put here, that Rav Tversky cites is the Chafetz Chaim's ruling about the importance of teaching Torah to women. Again, certainly at odds with the Pashat Pshat in Chazal. Again, there are all sorts of answers, but that's not what the Chafetz Chaim does over there. He doesn't go ahead and says, oh, what about the Gemara and Givateret and the like. He says that that was true then, but times have changed, and now something different is called for, and this is what we need. And because of that, he saved Klal Yisrael. I mean, if you look at what was happening to these girls before Beis Yaakov, it was devastating. And this isn't exactly what the Rambam was doing in these sources, but I think it's very similar. You'll say, what's the raya? After all, like we saw, the Chazon Ish doesn't bring any rayas from Gemara that this is true, any rayas from Rishonim, this is true. So as Rav Tversky puts it, that his ruling is supported by the full force of the entire Torah corpus because he was guided by his Torah intuition, formed by a lifetime devotion to mastery of that corpus. Chachmei HaMesorah combined encyclopedic knowledge with intuitive understanding to represent the Torah accurately. He quotes there a very fascinating story. Chaim Volozhiner founded Volozhiner Yeshiva, which is really a change from what was until that point. Until that point, for the most part, people learned in local Bate Medrash. And so someone asked for Chaim, you know, why do you need to shake things up? Why? What's wrong with the current system? Why do you need a central yeshiva where everybody goes to? And Reb Chaim says that it's true that for most Gemaras, it will be good enough to just learn them in your local base medrash. But there are some Gemaras that are so enigmatic that without access to Gedolei Yisrael, which is only possible if you have a more centralized base medrash, people won't understand them. And he gives an interesting example. What's an illustration of that idea? The Gemara Pesachim that says you're allowed to kill an Am Haaretz on Yom Kippur, even on Yom Kippur. So what's shot? Like, why did he pick that example? There are lots of enigmatic Gemaras, lots of Gemaras that are schwer. So I think what Tversky was suggesting is that the reason why we understand that that Gemara is not operative. Again, the Rishonim actually do address that question. It does seem, the Rif points out that Am Haaretz does seem to mean different things in different places. But on a most fundamental level, you need Gedolei Yisrael to be able to sort of say, no, that Gemara is irrelevant for our Am Haaretz. And sometimes you'll be motzi adin shelo kipshuto because of a stira to another gemara like Tosos does. But sometimes it's because of the broad principles and the concepts of Torah. So what we've seen in a certain sense is something that perhaps makes Machshava very difficult. You know, going back to what I said before, you'll learn, and the truth is it's not just Machshava. To a lesser degree, I think it's true in Halacha as well, though when it comes to Halacha, things are generally speaking a little more precise, more formulated. But what it points out is that, you know, what I said before, you'll sometimes hear people say things like, very broadly, you know, the Torah says this or the like, and you'll have a kasha from here or there. The fact that you have a kasha, now obviously it's going to depend who's saying that, but the fact that you have a kasha doesn't in and of itself invalidate their position. And in a sense then, That is why learning machshava is very difficult, because you need that breadth. Again, you know, what I'm saying is, well, if you see a certain makor, you know, that you can't build a whole Ikar Emunah based off of that makor. But at the same time, in this piece from Rav Tursky, he points out that there are two positions about Torah. Torah is chasuma nitna. It has to be looked at as one big unit, and it's also Megillah, Megillah, Nidna. It's also given in pieces. And you also need to be able to go ahead and take a look at the different makoros and try to understand them. And you can't lose sight of the forest, but you also can't forget the trees. And when learning a topic, it's so important to really be willing to do both, especially you're not yet holding by that mastery of Kol Torah Kula. So then really we have no choice but to look to Chazal and try to understand what each and every Makor is saying. And then as we go through each and every Makor is in Chazal, Rishonim, Achronim, try to arrive at a understanding of what the Torah wants. Yeah.
How does one know what source is actually, right? You hear something or you learn something, it's a source. How do you know that it actually has taken in that person, the Rav has taken in the full breadth of the Torah? And if we know you can incorporate that.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, you know, it's important certainly to... be aware of who you're listening to. And if they're saying something that seems to be at odds with other things, that they're not willing to make that statement. In other words, you know, this is a little tricky, but it's important. It's actually something else that the Chazon Ish held, to know who the speaker is and where they're holding. It's a good point. And sometimes you might not know. And therefore you have to, I don't want to say take it with a grain of salt, but take that into account. So what does this mean? Maybe a little more lemaisa. So I want to look at what the Rambam tells us in terms of how to read Agadita. The Rambam writes this. He actually writes this both in the Hakdama to Perek HaChelek. In Sanhedrin, there's a lot of Agadita. So in the Perashat Mishnayos and the Hakdama to there, he talks about Agadita, which is what you have over here. He basically makes the same idea as well, actually, in the Mor Nevuchim. And the Rambam over here writes that there are three schools of thought when it comes to learning Agadita, three approaches. The first group, he says this is the largest group, Hakas HaRishona, Vehem Rov, Asher Nifgashti. And what do they say? They understand Chazals literally, or at least Mevinim Osam Kipashtam, and that's okay. They're not troubled by that. They read it, they understand it Kipshuto, and that doesn't really bother them. The fact that, let's say, for example, some of their statements are, I don't know, seemingly impossible. I was in Tisha B'Av sitting next to someone in Shul, and they were learning the Agadita and Gittin, and it talks about how many people were killed in the various destructions. And if you, like, add it up, it's like billions and trillions of people were killed. And so what Chavusa said, okay, like, how could this be? There were like hundreds of billions of people living in Eretz Yisrael. They were all killed during the Chorban. And the other one says, Dutch state. Okay, they went on. So that's most people. That's most people. And the Rambam says, they're wrong. That's clearly not what Chazal meant. Then he says the second group of people, and this also has a bunch of people, Hakasa Shnia. And they also understand Chazal Kipshuto, but they are Mizalzalbo, right? They're Mizalzalbo because, you know, like that's ridiculous. So they make fun of Chazal. Of course, there weren't hundreds of billions of people who were killed during Chorban Bayis Shnia. So, or in the aftermath in Beitar and the like, that's absurd. So they're Mizalzal in Chazal. And he says, these group of people are also wrong. They're worse than the first ones. At least the first people have respect for Divrei Chazal. They don't understand them correctly, but at least they have respect. So what's the right approach? So I'll just skip to here. Akasa Shlishis, Behem Chai Hashem, Me'atim Me'od, Ad She'efshar Lekro Lahem Kas, Kamo She'efshar Lomar Al Hashemesh Min. The third group is so small, you can barely even call them a group. The minority of people. Behem Anashim Shenizbarira Etzlam Godlos HaChachamim. V'toh tfunasam b'mesh nimtza b'chlal dvarim hamarim al inyanim amitiyim me'od. V'af al pishem ma'atim u'mefuzarim b'kamakomos b'chibureyem hareyim marim al shleimusam b'asagasam el emes. So these third group of people, on the one hand, they have respect for Chazal, like the first group, but they're also sophisticated. They ask good questions, you know. They would agree that certain things are impossible. There are people, he says, that go ahead and they look at certain things in Chazal and they see tremendous wisdom. And so even when they encounter something that doesn't seem to make a lot of sense, they say, Yesh Dvarim B'Go. There's something here. I might not understand it. It might be beyond me. And so if they could suggest a pshat, they do. And if not, they say, I don't know. I don't know what this means. There's something deep here. There's something profound here. What it is, I don't quite know. But they don't take either of the first two approaches. And that's what we have to do. So sometimes you'll come up with a pshat. Sometimes you won't come up with a pshat. You're not always going to get it. But you're always going to have respect. It's very interesting. I'll get to you in 1 second. But, you know, a lot of times the Rambam and the Maharal are contrasted. And sometimes the Maharal certainly gives the Rambam a tough time. We saw the example earlier when he strongly disagrees with his approach to Alkan Tzipor Yagiu Rachamecha Mishaskenoso. But ultimately, in a sense, the Rambam and the Maharal, I think, though their mahalich is oftentimes very different, they're really on the same team, because what the Rambam is telling us and what the Maharal does so beautifully is show how there's something deep, something profound in everything in Chazal. What Maharal does in all of his farm is just he takes Ma'amarim of Chazal, so frequently Ma'amarim that on their own are just very obscure, doesn't seem to be containing any particularly great insight. Oftentimes it has very weird or far-fetched or unnecessary details. And he shows you how every prat in this particular agada is something deep, it's something profound. And here in this quote I gave you from the Maharal, you see his deep respect for the Rambam. And that comes from the fact that they're both trying to do that. It is true, and we'll talk about this maybe another time, that the Rambam certainly used other sources. He esteemed Aristotle. He thought there was a lot to be gained from Chachma Yevanis. But if you look at the Makoros of the Rambam, if you look at the Mor Nevuchim, and you know the footnotes which tell you where his ideas are from. They're, you know, he quotes Chazal lots more times than he quotes the Greeks. And psukim, you know, every page typically, you know, has several psukim. And the question is, how do we understand? How do we get to the bottom of what they mean? Sometimes we will. And sometimes if we don't, we have to say, okay, there's something great here, and I just don't know what it means. Yeah.
Really explain that when John was describing the three different groups of students in the synagogue, so group number three was to ask questions, not necessarily know where the answer comes from. What's the big difference, the end result, group number one, group number three?
Because group number one says we should understand it kapshuto, and that's what it means. Chazal meant that 10 trillion people, or whatever it was, died, right? Chazal meant that Og Melech HaBashan was 10 miles tall. I don't know. And that's what it says. So that's what it means. The third cut appreciate that's not what it means. Certainly didn't literally take place. We're not meant to understand it simplistically. Either they discover the profound and deep meaning here, or they don't. But it's totally different than the first group. The first group isn't even troubled by the difficulty.
Would group number three attempt to resolve it?
Yes, they attempt as much as they can, and if they succeed, good. And if not, so they leave out with the tzarchian.
How do they figure out if they succeed?
Does it make sense? Does it work? You know, sometimes you have a pshat and it feels right, or you learn a maral on a gadita and you see, wow. I never would have thought about that, but this Gemara that, you know, until this point was so sussum is now so clear. Take a look at the Michtav Meliyahu, who I think puts this idea very nicely. B'divrei agada asher lo nevinim, ein anu mechuyavim lilmod osam v'lismoch avodaseinu aleihem. When we see a statement in Chazal, this is the bottom of page 3, we see a statement in Chazal that we don't understand. So we're not mechuyav to learn it, to build our avoda on it. Im ki barur shehem yesodos haTorah, certainly it is fundamental. There's something here. Aval halacha shehi lemaisa harei mechuyavim hineinu b'maisei hamitzvos, im gam lo nevinim. Aval agada shehiba lehayir lelev, harei kol zman she'ena me'ira lanu. If it's not inspiring us, why? Mipnei katnas hasagaseinu. So einanu mechuyavim l'asek ba, ad shenizka v'nala l'madrega shenavinosa. The yoser mizeh, hen ba'agados, genuzim, sodos haTorah. In the agados are hidden the sodos haTorah. V'chol zman shelefi madregaseinu lo yizgal alanu hasod, until the point that you actually understand that, so you're able to appreciate what it's really saying. Until you're able to do that, imkain ein bo to ls behis asek bo. There's not so much point in being osek in it. Mikevan shal kolpanim anu masigin osar shalom kamitaso. Because anyway, we're not understanding it correctly. So, I think that's a very similar point, though, maybe from a different perspective. You know, if sometimes you have to say, okay, let me keep on working on this until I understand it. And sometimes, especially perhaps if you're not in the sugya, you'll say, okay, you know, I don't understand what that means, and you'll move on. But what's important is that you not sort of accept that superficial understanding and then build a philosophy on it. When we're learning, and this will have to be our final point, when we're learning both agada and halacha, our goal, halacha, I don't just mean halacha lemais, I mean gemara. Our goal, or anything, our goal is to understand the deeper message, what's really being said. And that takes a lot of time and a lot of work. When you start a sugya in Gemara, usually at the beginning of a sugya, you'll have lots and lots of kashas, lots of things you don't understand, things that are sometimes there, they contradict other things. And sometimes, after you work very, very hard, you come up with a mahalech, or you hear a mahalech. And now everything makes sense. All those kashas are answered. But that you only came to that after a lot of work. And once you arrive at that understanding, you appreciate how your original Havana was wrong. And the same thing over here. I wanted to read to you this piece, but we'll just have to suffice with the last line. This is a piece from Shurei Das. Shurei Das is a fascinating sefer, by the way. It's written by Reb Yosef Leib Bloch, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Telz. I think he became the Rosh Yeshiva in 1910. And these were Musar Shmuzin, but they weren't, I would say, standard Musar Shmuzin. That's why they're called Shurei Das. They were much more Shurim in Hashkafa and philosophy, but also with a very practical understanding. They're very, very interesting. So he writes over here, he's talking about Tamei HaMitzvos, and he talks about how the unity in terms of Tamei HaMitzvos between the Kabbalistic interpretations and the non-Kabbalistic interpretations. It's not just the pshat that they're two different things. But we'll just skip to his very last line. V'zuhi kol ha-te'uda shalom de ha-Torah. Lachdor yoser el nishmasa. What are we trying to do when we learn? We're trying to get to the neshama of the Torah. Kol echad lefi kocho. This is true to the extent that we're able to in every chelak in Torah. Bein ba'agada, bein ba'halacha. Shirak az efshar lis'alos ulahavin es amitasa. Uvizem nimtzen imos ha-Torah ve'irvona ve'arivusa. First of all, then you'll appreciate the sweetness of Torah when you get to that deeper understanding, and it'll be transformative. The Zohar talks about different levels of people looking at the Torah, and he talks about some people that, you know, they just see the chitonios of Torah, like the clothing, or some people just, you know, it just looks like folklore, and some people get deeper, and some people get deeper and deeper. It gives a very graphic imagery of somebody taking off their clothing. There's another piece in the Zohar, maybe we'll just see, this will be the very last thing. Zohar is trying to address the question that sometimes the Torah seems to basically teach us, like, I would say, seemingly irrelevant historical tidbits. So, for example, the Torah tells us that the Teva rested on Harei Arirat. So Zohar says, we'll see in the second paragraph, Kigon hai dechsev atana chateva b'chodesh hashvi b'shivasar liyom l'chodesh al Harei Arirat. Vade ha'kra mechlala de'oraisa nafak. Ba'asi b'sipor de'alma. Mai ich paslan. Ishari b'hai har, b'hai o b'hai. D'ha ba'asar chad l'shvi. Who cares where the Teva landed? Why do I have to know that it landed on Harei Arirat? It landed somewhere. Alilamid ala kla kulo yatza. V'zakayin inan Yisrael, disyayev lehu, oraisa ila, oraisa dekshot. Uman de amar deu sipura de oraisa lachzal sipur bilvad, ka'asi tipech ruchay. Someone who just thinks that it's here like to tell you that information. I mean, if you're writing a history book about this story of the Teva, then you would want to include the place where the Teva landed. Someone who thinks that's the pshat in the Torah, tipach ruchay, chas v'shalom. Diachi, if that were true, lav'i oraisa ilah, it wouldn't be an elevated Torah, oraisa dekshot, and it wouldn't even be a true Torah. What do you mean it wouldn't be true? I mean, it's a fact. It's true or it's not true. It's true. So, no. it wouldn't be an elevated Torah, it wouldn't be a holy Torah, it wouldn't be a true Torah. Elevadai oraisa kedisha ila, ihi oraisa dikshot. The MS of the Torah comes through when you appreciate that there's something profound in everything. You may or may not be able to understand it, but every single detail, including where the table landed, is somehow or another, according to the Zohar, it's Alpi Kabbalah, but somehow or another, profound. The Rambam says the same thing. This is in his Akdama to Parak Chelek, where he presents the Yid Gimli Karyamuna, and he's talking here about Torah Min HaShamayim. And he writes, Kol os yesh b'chochmos v'niflos l'mi shevinu Hashem. Every letter has something profound. He talks about, in this context, the heresy of Menashe, who made fun of the seemingly silly, insignificant parts of Torah. The Rambam writes over there, every pasuk is of equal value. Anochi Hashem Elokecha and the lineage of Bnei Esav. It's all Chachma Hashem. The lo tusag tachlis Chachma. Person can't understand everything because it's Arucha Mida, Meretz Mida, or Chava Mineyam. And the Rambam continues over here. So what is poor man to do but to pray to Hashem, Gal Einai, V'abita Niflaos Mitara Secha. And that's what we have to do. That's our job. We have to dive into HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Gal Einai, V'abita Niflaos Mitara Secha. And we have to work hard, trying to understand it, trying to discover that wisdom. And B'siyata D'shmaya, Bezus Hashem, together will be Zocha to understand something of that infinite Torah.
Ishka.
Achtia.